Today's episode is brought to you by the Clackamas County Fair and Rodeo, everything a county fair was meant to be. Coming to you August 16th through 20th, only in Canby. Tickets and information at clackamascountyfair.com or download the new app on Google Play or the Apple App Store. This episode is also brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. Sunday services on campus and online at 9 and 11 a.m. Learn more at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me? Welcome to the Now Hear This Canby podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Tyler Franke, and this is what's happening this week in our community. Magical. That was the word organizers and attendees were using to describe the experience as thousands of music fans descended on the Clackamas County Fairgrounds in Canby for an unforgettable edition of the resurgent Wild Hair Music Festival, headlined by Zach Bryan, Marcus King, Morgan Wade, Lucero, and many others. A companion to the tribute band extravaganza that is Hairfest, which rocked and rolled across the same stage as the weekend prior, the Wild Hair Music Fest is a jam-packed collection of top-tier talents and rising stars from genres spanning country, Americana, blues, southern rock, folk, and even a little gospel and R&B. Both festivals are organized and presented by the same local team, including founders Joan Monin of the Wild Hair Saloon in Canby and Oregon City, Jason Fellman of JFell Presents and the Journey tribute band Stone in Love, and new general manager Kyle Lang. It was a magical weekend on so many levels, Fellman told Now Hear This Canby afterward. Inspired performances, lively crowds, and an excellent new venue at the Clackamas County Fairgrounds. The music fest was a smashing success, Fellman said, drawing around 9,000 attendees across the two-day affair. Saturday's jaw-droppingly robust lineup certainly did not disappoint, kicking off at 9 a.m. with local starlet Olivia Harms and banging to a close some 15 hours later with the frenetic guitar-shredding stylings of the Grammy-nominated Marcus King, at age 26 already regarded as perhaps music's best guitar virtuoso and a future blues legend. But there is little doubt that many of the moments fans will be recounting for years to come happened on Friday night when Brian, the earnest singer-songwriter and military veteran who, by all measures, is smack in the middle of a meteoric rise to country music superstardom, took the stage in Canby, Oregon. "Thank you, Canby," he said. "It's a beautiful, beautiful town for all of you that live here." Brian and his band received the full Canby experience, including getting an on-site trim and shave from local salon Headcase Beauty and Barber Company. Brian, whose acclaimed major label debut album from 2 months ago, American Heartbreak, currently sits at the top of the U.S. country, rock, and folk charts, told organizers it was his first time headlining a music festival, but it certainly will not be his last. Indeed, the morning of the kickoff for the Wild Hair Music Fest, Brian dropped a new 9-song EP, Summertime Blues, and announced a giant cross-country tour with stops in some of the nation's biggest amphitheaters and music festivals, including Moon River and Lollapalooza. Despite taking the main stage after 10 p.m., Brian had no intention of turning in early, delivering the longest set of the day with more than 90 minutes of inspired performing, including a team-up with fellow music fester Charles Wesley Godwin, whose rugged backwoods baritone had serenaded the throngs earlier in the day. As if that weren't enough, Brian thrilled the audience by returning to the boards once more for an encore performance of Oklahoma Smoke Show and Revival. In a tweet posted in the early morning hours Saturday, Brian made clear that the outing would not only be long remembered by the fans. "Tonight in Canby, Oregon was one of my favorite shows I have ever played," he said. "Thank you guys for having us and being kind. Faith in humanity is at an all-time high." But for one group from south of Salem, the night was about more than music. Earlier this year, Jefferson resident Grace Hawley lost one of her best friends, Gary James McDaniel, a multi-sport athlete from SIO who would have turned 19 on July 15th, opening night for Wild Hair Music Fest. His favorite song was one of Brian's first hits, Snow, a tender love ballad with a hint of Christian allegory that showed his tremendous early promise as a songwriter. Hawley posted on Twitter asking if Brian would consider dedicating the song to Gary on his birthday, to which he readily agreed, tweeting, "I'm so sorry, and I can't wait to play it. It will be for him." Hawley and more than two dozen of Gary's loved ones wore shirts made especially for the concert and were on hand to celebrate their fallen friend's love of life and music. Though the temperatures were in the 80s, snow came early Friday night, and the experience for the group was almost indescribable. "Just very special," Hawley said. "Having almost all of Gary's closest friends there together for him on his birthday, knowing that Zach Bryan was going to sing his favorite song for him, I can't really put it into words. It felt like nothing else mattered. We were just all there to celebrate one of the most special people we had the pleasure of knowing. It made me miss him extra, but he had the best seat in the house, and I know he was definitely there with us. Zach really is amazing. I wish I could repay him for doing that." For photos and video, find this story on our website, canbyfirst.com, or follow the Canby Current on Facebook and Instagram at Canby Current. The new executive director of the Canby Area Chamber of Commerce is resigning after less than 6 months in the position, she announced in an email to members Wednesday afternoon, saying the decision was for personal reasons. "Please know that the reason for my departure is only one of personal circumstances due to an unfortunate family issue that has arisen and requires my full attention," Executive Director Lori Tarter said in the message. "This responsibility leaves me unable to fulfill the commitments of my position in the foreseeable future." A former longtime leader of a nationally recognized nonprofit in the Detroit, Michigan area, as well as an independent consultant, Tarter took the helm of the local business networking and advocacy group in February and impressed business owners and community members with her relentless enthusiasm and vision. "The Canby community impressed her," Tarter said, "particularly the chamber's governing body, whom she called the most dedicated and engaged board of directors of any organization she has worked with." She also praised chamber staff members Audrey Train and Robin Balcom as, quote, "extraordinarily talented, tireless, eminently flexible, dedicated, and passionate about making a difference for chamber members and the Canby community. Also, I want to thank all of you, the chamber members, for allowing me to serve you," she wrote. "I'm thankful for every lesson learned and for what each of you has brought to my life. I wish you all the best in the future." Tarter said she is confident the chamber will remain a vibrant and engaged voice for the business and community. Tarter's resignation is effective August 5th. One of her final engagements will be a Good Morning Canby networking opportunity hosted by yours truly at the Canby Current and Now Hear the Studios on July 28th. Tarter had replaced former director Kyle Lang, who served the chamber 4 years before stepping down to take on the new role of general manager of Hairfest and the Wild Hair Music Festival.
Thank you.
as the Canby Music Float wound its way through the parade route in the triumphant return of Canby's Independence Day celebration earlier this month. Attendees were treated to the sight of a different Brian than they may have been expecting, and a different side of the town's mayor. While Canby Music owner and founder Brian Haynes was leading the band on guitar as expected, some of those in attendance may have been surprised to see Canby Mayor Brian Hodson on the float as well, playing the heck out of a custom drum kit. Hodson, who in the past has cited the 4th of July bash as his favorite local event, normally relishes his role of serving in the vanguard and helping to lead the annual parade, but was intrigued by Haynes' offer to join the store's traditional concert on wheels. Hodson has played the drums for many years and has occasionally showcased his skills in a handful of local gigs. Though his official duties don't normally call for him to play the skins, it actually has happened before, including during a 2015 appearance on the late night show Who's the Ross, during a series in which host Aaron Ross interviewed mayors of various smaller towns around Portland. He also jumped on the drums at the Waite Park Gazebo for Canby's Independence Day celebration in 2017 with the Speed Humps, a short-lived band composed of local community members. Impressively, the group performed the impromptu show after just one practice and a short rehearsal the morning of. Haynes said he believes the special guest appearance is something Canby will remember for a long time. Canby Music started its tradition within a tradition of the float concert a few years back and has continued it ever since, with the exception of 2021, when Haynes and his team played at the gazebo because the parade was canceled due to COVID-19. "It's a lot of fun to get everybody who's working here up on the float and play a few songs," he said. "You actually reach more people that way, and it's a more fun experience." The parade was extremely well attended from Haynes' vantage point. "There were tons of people," he said. "Normally there would be spots where it would die down, especially near the end, but this year it was just solid all the way through. The weather agreed and it was just really nice. We were glad to have the 4th of July back the way it is meant to be." I have two questions for you. What is your favorite summer food, and why is it Elsie's Own potato salad from Cuts Forth Market? Nicknamed Canby's matriarch, Elsie Cuts Forth was widely known for her business and civic leadership, generosity, community spirit, her avid support of the Canby Historical Society, and of course, her legendary potato salad. The longtime owner and operator of Cuts Forth Market with her husband Glenn and family, Elsie started the market's deli at a time when they were not the ubiquitous feature of grocery stores and quick stops that they are today. As deli manager Erica DePerry explained, Elsie adapted most of the deli's recipes and methods from her own home kitchen, and that remains the case today. "We've added some new recipes over the years, but pretty much 90% are the same," DePerry told Now Hear This Canby. "They're still Elsie's original from-scratch recipes. Nothing comes out of a box or a bag. That's pretty neat for a deli nowadays." Elsie started making potato salad in bulk for the Max Berg and Canby Rod and Gun Clubs back in the 1960s, and would also whip up large batches for baseball teams and catering events. Elsie's Own potato salad was added to the menu of Cuts Forth Market Deli in the 90s and quickly became her most famous dish. "People come from miles around for the signature side," DePerry said, "especially in the summertime." While the store regularly sells more than 100 pounds of the golden good stuff any day of the year, demand more than triples in the dog days of summer. "July is our huge month for potato salad because of Independence Day," DePerry said. "We sell 1,000 pounds just over those 3 days around the 4th of July." To say the recipe is a closely guarded secret would be a major understatement. Elsie's biography, A Life for Canby, published 4 years after her passing in 2003, concluded with a detailed list of her best and most beloved recipes, including ones used in the Cuts Forth Deli. The entry under Elsie's Own potato salad, however, reads as follows: "This recipe is the only one the family cannot give out. To try it, readers will have to visit Cuts Forth Thriftway Deli in Canby." The current keeper of the potato salad secret is Margarita Rodriguez, a 30-year employee who originally learned it from Elsie herself. Though the store may sell 1,000 pounds or more on a busy holiday weekend, The deli still makes it in small, 30-pound batches, just like Elsie did.
I'm Roz Mason, running for Oregon Senate District 26. Voters across the political spectrum know the majority Supreme Court decision to overturn abortion rights and similar efforts in Republican-led states is an attack on our freedoms. For years, I worked in the domestic abuse field, seeing firsthand the harm to women and teen girls from a lack of reproductive information and birth control, too few economic options, and the tragedies of partner abuse and sexual violence. Now, state legislatures decide abortion access. Oregon will protect women's right to abortion only if Democratic, independent, and moderate Republicans fight to elect reasonable legislators. Your vote makes a difference, so I can fight for privacy, our rights, and healthier families. Paid for by Mason for Oregon, 21968.
Hey Tyler, read any good books lately?
Yeah, actually I'm reading a really good one right now.
Awesome, what's it about?
It's kind of complicated, but there's like these two kids with an absent parent, and then this mysterious stranger shows up with his sinister accomplices, and they just start wreaking havoc in their lives. I think it's like a Faustian metaphor.
Wow, that sounds really dense.
It is.
Interesting, though. Who wrote it?
You know, I think it's like a doctor. Starts with like an S or something. Sassos.
Tyler, are you reading The Cat in the Hat?
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to. It's taken me like 2 months to get this far.
Okay. Well, hey, whatever your interest or reading level, open the world of all things books at the Book Nook in downtown Canby.
Yeah, guys, this local independently owned and operated store is your one-stop shop for the latest releases and great deals on a huge variety of previously owned books, as well as games, art, and writing supplies and gifts.
They also do book clubs and game nights if you're looking for some fun, healthy activities right here in Canby. And hey, you know, for you, Tyler, they have a really expansive selection of children's books.
Oh, cool. Anyway, check them out on Facebook and Instagram, online at booknookcanby.com, or stop by 294 Northwest 2nd Avenue and let their friendly staff introduce you to your new favorite read. Hey, Frankie, why do you think I'd be interested in children's books?
We'll talk about it later.
Oh, okay.
On the Canby Conversation today, we're talking with Jim Gadberry. He is a legendary wrestling coach, including at Canby back in the 1980s, was it, or 90s?
90s.
90s. And he is helping to stand up Canby High School's first Wrestling Hall of Fame. Welcome, Jim.
Thank you, Tyler.
Yeah.
Pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. How are you doing?
Perfect.
Yeah.
Want to promote this event and get people out.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have the induction for the first class, which Canby has quite a history of wrestling. So it's an enormous freshman class, if you will, for this Hall of Fame. 139 individuals?
31 individuals.
Yeah.
And 21 state trophy teams.
Mm.
So
yeah.
It's been an undertaking of about 6 months.
Yeah, yeah. Where did this come from, this effort?
Well, It originally started about 4 years ago, and then it waned, probably because of a number of things, COVID particularly.
Sure.
And then about 6-8 months ago, some of the individuals who were being inducted, who wrestled in the 50s, 60s, 70s, said, we understand you got a database. Let's do it again, and let's make it work this time. And I said, sure. And so we met at Gwynn's downtown here and looked around. I knew everybody. They knew me. And we started looking at this stuff. And, well, why do we do this? Why do we do that? And the rest is history.
Yeah. So you had been keeping track of these records over the years.
Yes. I've been in wrestling 40-some years, and I I have a plethora of state programs and district guides and a knowledge background. Having been a principal here at Canby, have our son go through Canby, and so it made sense to. And every school, Tyler, I've been in has had a wrestling Hall of Fame, and mm-hmm. I looked around and Canby had not, and so just saying logical, let's step forward, and these other guys threw in their records, and the rest is history.
Yeah. Yeah. Why do you think that we didn't have one? Because like I said, I mean, this is maybe one of our most impressive sports over the years. I mean, we don't have any athletic Hall of Fames that I'm aware of. But wrestling is something where we've seen a number of state champions, a number of it's been a very robust program for decades.
Yes. I'll put it in another. I call it one of the five-story programs since 1948. The OSAA started in 1948. Prior to that, I think Canby's first wrestling team was 38 or 39. Mm. And we have some of those records. But our group decided just to focus on the OSAA era, which began in 1948. And as one can go through and look at the 40s and the 50s, there was four or five programs around the state of Oregon. And Canby, as I say, was one of those storied programs that helped put wrestling, high school wrestling, forward. Mm. And so it's just logical that we do that. Now, in all fairness, I believe in the 90s and early 2000s, underneath Coach Nugent, before the gym had been remodeled several times in a high school, they had kind of a hybrid Hall of Fame recognition, but it isn't as exhaustive as this group has put together since 1948.
Yeah, yeah. Jim, you're actually in the National Wrestling Hall of Fame, as I understand it, as a coach.
Yeah. Okay.
but
this isn't about me.
It's not about you.
I was inducted in the Oregon chapter of the National Wrestling.
That was my seg into what you just alluded to. That you're not you do this. You're all about the recognition for the athletes and the kids. How does it feel to have helped? Kind of bring this incredible Hall of Fame to life. Having helped and just to be able to kind of bring this deserved recognition to this. Group of athletes over the years.
Well, it's try to make it short and sweet. It's been a wonderful experience. It still is. I just got off my internet. We're going to have Matt Lindland as an example. He's an Oregon boy, Olympian silver medalist in 2000. Just stepped down, but for about 8 or 9 years was the Greco-Roman coach for USA Wrestling.
Wow.
And Matt's contacted me this morning, says, Jim, do I have to buy a ticket to come? And I laugh and says, no, Matt, just you and your wife show up. We'll introduce you and I've got your bio.
Yeah.
So it's been a nice process. Some of these people, Midwest, all over the United States, they hear about it. They text me, call me. Our group gets a hold of them. And so it's been fun unearthing these individuals, reminding them you did place in state or you were on a state trophy team.
Yeah.
Get here on August 6th. We're going to recognize you.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
A little bit like, it's like selling used cars.
Awesome. Yeah. Calling people out of the blue. It's like, oh, yeah, I did go to Canby High School.
That's true.
I'm just looking over the program here, but like you mentioned, 131 inductees. The largest group, it's kind of broken out by decades, but the largest is that 1950s to 59 with 27 individuals. We've had 36 individual state champions.
That's great.
Over the years. That's incredible.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been, and many of those, out of the 1950s, my record shows that there's going to be, at this point, 10 confirmed of the 27, and there's four or five others still haven't got back to me. And it's either the individual or family representatives, as unfortunate as it may be, but back in that era, there's several people who have passed, but their sons and daughters, relatives, are all excited to come and represent their fathers, their uncles, to stand up, to be recognized on August 6th.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of the story of Cambry Wrestling a lot of times is, and as it was with you, Jim, and your son, Ian, it's a lot of multi-generational. You know, you've got brothers going through, multiple families of brothers that were state champions, the Owings family. We've got, you know, father-son, which is kind of neat as well, part of the story.
Tyler, you're correct. There's four or five families that will be recognized because of the sheer volume of, you know, the Owens boys, there's five of them
yeah.
going to be inducted. Another prominent family now in this era is the Domans.
Yeah.
And there's several Domans that are, you know, are going to be inducted.
Yeah.
So that usually happens in a lot of sports, but particularly in wrestling, particularly here in Canby, is, and as one of the other organizers has been there many, many years, what they kind of laugh is that, well, back in the 50s and 60s, we knew everybody and we were small. And so once you stepped out and went out for a sport, usually you got four or five of your friends to follow.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Am I correct as well, Jim, especially in the early days, maybe now as well, but a lot of times it was these kind of country boys that were really strong from doing farm work. Is that right? Wrestling cattle and things like that. And then they go in and wrestle a person.
Absolutely. You know, injuries, home on the farm, that might have kept them out of a district meet.
Yeah.
Or a state meet. Get the chores done and then get into the wrestling meet.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a central theme from this agricultural-based community back in the 40s and the 50s that developed young men that, you know, at that point, still men,
yeah.
you know, we've now balanced it out. We've got women out for Canby
yeah.
wrestling, and in fact, we're going to induct
right.
the very first woman from the 2022 class, Lexi Zuriaga,
yeah.
is going to be on the wall up there, and she's excited.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome. And she is an incredible person. So happy for her. She just graduated. So what is sort of logistically, or what's the actual hall look like? You mentioned that there's a wall. Is there an actual hall? Is there trophies and photos and things? What are we working with?
To sum it up, up in the wrestling room, Darren Monin, longtime assistant coach,
mm-hmm.
Part of the 1984 team that earned a trophy. He'll be inducted. And he's a building construction teacher. I'll put a little plug in here, and Darren hears this, or anybody else. I tried to hire him as a principal here, but he laughed at me. He says, I think I'm making too much money doing building construction. So I said, okay, well, one of these days you're going to come back because you could really teach these kids in the trades.
Yeah.
He's happily in Const
yeah.
at Canby High School. And through his building construction classes, took this on, supported by the school district, which we really appreciate from
yeah.
our group. And there is a beautiful display up in the wrestling room of all 131 individuals, recognizing the 21 state teams and, you know, and their coach that coached them to a state trophy in the year. And so it is really an impressive display, which on August 6th, starting at 2:00, the inductees, team trophy people, visitors will be given tours and get to go up there and actually see the display up in the wrestling room.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. And I mean, I have to say that the Monins, through their businesses, I mean, that was, they have been incredible supporters financially of high school, especially athletics. So that was probably a good call as well to stick with the business.
Yeah. Joan, my hat's off to Joan and Darren, and particularly Joan. If she hears this, she'll chuckle and probably
yeah.
poke me in the ribs when she sees me.
I'm looking over the program for the August 6th ceremony. Is there, or maybe this was existing, but is there a scholarship that's going to be established with this as well? Or?
Absolutely, Tyler. This group, when we got together about 6 months ago to create this and start this again, one of the first things they said, it would be nice to create a scholarship beginning in 2023 for a Canby graduate who is going to go on and go to school
yeah.
and either 2-year, 4-year trade school.
Yeah.
And so we have been soliciting money since that time. And we're up to $3,000 as of this morning. And we want to endow it for 5 years. It's a $500 scholarship. Originally, we set it at $1,000. So your listeners out there, and anybody can donate to the school. There's a process.
Yeah.
We would appreciate that because we'd love to get up to 1,000 next year in 2023.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. That would be great. So folks can contact the high school office to learn about how to contribute.
Actually contact the business office.
Okay.
And in the business office and ask for Amy. And she is the one who put together the fund for us and worked out all the tax donation paperwork. They can donate online or as well as snail mail, mail in a check, cash.
Yeah. Yeah. Are we, I'm just looking this over, and you mentioned that, you know, some of these folks have passed over the years, but my family here, this is going to be hundreds of people out for this induction ceremony.
It's funny.
They're not
going to
fit in the wrestling room.
Well, no, we're in the cafeteria.
Okay.
The cafeteria is 400+.
I think we'll be out in the grandstands.
Well, we started there, but then we had another activity going on, and of course the weather. We're probably close of the inductees of 131, Tyler, probably between 60 and 65 as of today have committed.
Yeah.
And then we're trying to connect with anybody who was on those state trophy teams. They can come back. Actually, we have a gentleman coming in from 1950.
Yeah.
He'll probably be our oldest inductee. Mm. He was on the 1950 team.
Yeah. Yeah. I just feel like this is such a beautiful effort and beautiful gesture to recognize, to kind of build school and community pride, to recognize the achievements of these athletes and young men and women over the years. I think just looking at it, you'll just kind of feel that sense of pride.
Correct. And I need to, you know, give recognition to the athletic director at Canby High School,
yeah.
Ben Weinecker.
Yeah.
He's been instrumental to help us put the program together through his staff. His staff is also running off the certificates for each of the inductees.
Mm.
And as Ben told us, this will be kind of a template for other sports, as well as a potential all sports Hall of Fame at Canby down the road.
Oh, awesome. Okay. I was going to ask about that. So they're kind of looking at this as a little bit of a pilot program for
Correct.
Maybe spinning off into football and baseball,
Correct.
Some of our other sports.
Correct.
Yeah. Wonderful. We've got Ken Buckle serving as MC. Did he coach wrestling? I know he coached football.
Well, yes, he did. By the way, he coached wrestling with me.
Okay, fair enough.
And if you ever get him cornered,
yeah,
he was a longtime football coach,
yes.
And he goes, I'll coach with you. And I said, fine, you don't know anything about wrestling, but you got to go through every practice. If you go through every practice, I'll let you coach.
Yeah.
And he'll tell you to this day, he survived every practice in 1984-85 in Milwaukee High School. And I don't know if he ever coached wrestling. Well, he did. He continued on a couple more years after I left.
Yeah, yeah. You coached wrestling in high school for 36 years. Is that correct?
I think it's over 40.
Okay.
If you
add in.
I started in 74.
Yeah.
And I've moved around, kind of a suitcase guy.
Yeah.
So I think I was down at Nestucca for 4 years at the high school down there.
Yeah.
Then I've coached back at Milwaukee and coached at North Marion for 4 years. So.
Yeah. What do you think kept you in it for so long?
You know, it was a foundation growing up in Brookings. And I just, it became something I really enjoyed. And so consequently, once I got out of the military and got back and got my teaching certificate and said, hey, I like wrestling. And so I was fortunate to be given a freshman job at Milwaukee High School in the fall of 1974, and the rest is history.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, Jim, thank you so much for taking time out today. The Wrestling Hall of Fame induction ceremony is going to be August 6th, which is Saturday. At Canby High School in the cafeteria and wrestling room, as you mentioned. They're going to kick off with a bit of meet and greet social hour at 2 p.m. and then the ceremony starts at 3.
That is correct, Tyler.
Anything else to add?
Nope. Just like I say, it's open to the public. And we're hoping to get as many of these inductees and these teams here represented.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks, Coach.
Thank you.
Clackamas County Fair is everything a county fair was meant to be. Join in the fun August 16th through the 20th only at the historic Clackamas County Fairgrounds and Event Center in Canby, Oregon. There's something for the whole family to enjoy, from food and entertainment to livestock and agriculture to rides on the Midway. Visit Days Gone By at the Pioneer Village, featuring a reenactment of Oregon Pioneer Days, and view creative exhibits from local artisans. Stay for the world-class Canby Rodeo, and don't miss the rodeo after-party with the Boondock Boys Friday night and Nate Botsford Saturday. For details and to buy your tickets in advance, visit ClackamasCountyFair.com or download the new app on Google Play or the Apple App Store. The Clackamas County Fair, everything a county fair was meant to be.
Hey, Tyler, we have a furry new friend I wanted to show you. His name is Frankie with an I-E. Isn't that cute?
Oh, I get it, because you're Frankie with a C-K-E.
Yeah.
That's so clever.
I know.
The only cute thing I see on this video is me, because you're blurry and frozen.
What? No way. I just got a new phone, and it's supposed to have a great camera.
Dude, you can have the best camera in the world, but you still freeze up if your video calls don't have quality internet.
So what should I do? Frankie's playing in the pool, and it's absolutely adorable.
I'm guessing you're using your mobile data for this FaceTime call, right? Just connect to your home Wi-Fi instead. I bet your video comes through just fine. You did just upgrade to direct link with Wi-Fi and fast upload speed, so you might as well get the best use out of them.
Oh, yeah, I did. Okay, hang on. There. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I should be on my Wi-Fi now.
Yep.
Can you see Frankie in the pool?
Oh, he looks like he's having a blast. See what fast upload speeds can do? For upload and downloads at the speed of visit www.directlink.coop/internet or give him a call at 503-266-8111.
Frankie, give me back my phone.
Canby Then is brought to you by The Book Nook, Canby's amazing local bookstore and gift shop. It's your source for new and used books, comic books, audiobooks, vintage books, children's books, nonprofit and business books. You get the idea. In fact, I recently discovered these folks after reading this ad for so long. I went in there. Now my wife is upset with me for how much money I spend inside The Book Nook. So thank you, Book Nook, for being amazing and helping me buy a lot of books. It's all things books across from the backstop in downtown Canby. Well, this episode of Canby Then deals with farming. It all goes back to farming. Canby wouldn't be where and what it is without it. And most likely, Canby wouldn't be here at all. Canby can credit its agricultural success to the area's fertile sandy soil. Deposited here, geologists believed, in the massive floods from Lake Missoula that ripped through the Willamette Valley during the last ice age, some 15,000 years ago. And of course, the hard work of our first farmers and settlers. But the area had a reputation as a Garden of Eden long before the first Oregon Trailblazers came their way here to Canby. It began with the berries. The ground we now call Canby was open and virtually clear of trees when white settlers first arrived here in the middle of the 19th century. Although vast rows of trees encircled this prairie, abundant crops of strawberries and other wild fruits grew here. Most historians believe the land was a garden for the local Native American tribes who had long before burned down the trees and allowed berries to grow. The tribes who used this area, the Clackamas, a Chinookian tribe, were a nomadic people who wandered throughout the valley. They used the area like a giant store, in some respects traveling to where the plants they survived on flourished. What is now Canby was apparently a favorite spot, with the small tribes, as few as a dozen, never more than 80 or so, coming here for the fresh strawberries. The lush green valley was the home to Native Americans and their predecessors for eons. The Clackamas County Historical Society has several prehistoric relics collected from this area, indicating man had long used the meadows, springs, and trees of the area. Situated atop a grassy plateau above the Willamette and Mullala Rivers, the first settlement here was named Baker Prairie, probably the larger-than-life frontiersman James Baker, who lived for a time on the prairie, before leaving to make his reputation as an explorer, army scout, interpreter, soldier, territorial militia officer, and more, rubbing shoulders with legendary figures like Jim Bridger, Kit Carson,
and General Custer in the process. The rambling baker, who later in life would come to be known as Big Jim and Honest Jim, settled here in the early 1830s and operated a huge ranch and farm on the rich lands that now form North Canby. He stayed until at least 1838 and possibly as late as 1845. The records aren't exactly ironclad. What is certain is that Baker eventually tired of farming and left, selling his interests in the farm business to a man named W.C. Dement. Other settlers followed Baker's lead, and Canby soon cultivated a reputation as one of the Willamette Valley's richest farming utopias. Timber harvesting between 1873 and 1893 cleared the land and made the way for even more farming. If you plant it, it will grow. Peas, hops, filberts, flax, squash, potatoes, lettuce, melons, tomatoes, and of course, strawberries. You name it, it has been, or is still, been growing around here. Philander Lee, one of the Canby's founders and the patriarch of the family that donated the land that became the town's first 24 blocks, grew apples on his land and carted them up the road that would later become Highway 99E, bound for train cars leaving Oregon City that would take them south to prospectors on the California gold fields. Legend holds that Lee and his sons, frustrated by the narrow roads they encountered in Oregon City, mandated that Canby streets be wide enough to turn around a horse-drawn carriage, which is why downtown Canby streets are unusually spacious compared to most city centers. In the 1930s, green peas became so abundant that they took over a city block. Countless loads of peas were stripped from the vine at what became known as Pea Viner Corner on 13th and Ivy, now the home of the Canby Adult Center and the Canby Swim Center. After vining, the peas were trucked to Woodburn for food processing. Produce from Canby, especially fresh strawberries, were often first on the market in those days, and many a young Canbyite earned his or her first income as a berry picker in one of the town's many strawberry fields. Flower growers also discovered the land north of town, between the city and the Willamette River, was perfect for growing their crops. Ben Cummings grew lovely fields of pansies, irises, lilies, tulips, and other petaled varietals from the 1920s and 30s, and visitors would flock to Canby just to view his land. Swan Island dahlias, now one of the cultural centers of Canby, actually began, as the name suggests, on Swan Island in Portland. Swan Island dahlias was moved to rented land in Canby in the 1940s, and around 1953, 20 acres of farmland was purchased in Canby, and the business was relocated to its present site on North Hawley, a stone's throw from the Canby Ferry. Grant E. Mitch of Canby was the leading U.S. hybridizer of daffodils in the 1950s and 60s, and flower farms still surround the town today. Farming spurred the growth of the city's early economy and development from the establishment of a railroad depot to the Canby Ferry, both of which were used primarily for agriculture and other commercial pursuits before offering passenger service. It also led directly to and supported the Clackamas County Fair and Rodeo, the annual Dahlia Festival, and former warehouse development along the railroad line, which now form much of the infrastructure of downtown Canby. Three warehouses in particular, the W.H. Luck Warehouse, which burned in approximately 1930, the W.S. Hurst & Co. Warehouse, which was demolished in 1950, and the W.H. Bear Warehouse, which was demolished in the 1980s, facilitated shipments of farm products from Canby to market. By 1913, the Canby Produce Company, later the Canby Cooperative Cheese and Produce Company, had also established a warehouse along the railroad. Well, that does it for this episode of The Canby Current. As always, thank you so much for listening. I'm James Walton. Have a great day.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears? Even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling?
Or
that baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Canby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Canby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yeah, heck, you were just a baby back then.
I
And,
wait, what?
And they love to give back. They've been members of the Canby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately, like, caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Canby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Canby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net. Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.